Good morning. This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. The final unofficial results are in Canada's parliamentary elections. Joe Clark's Conservatives, 20-seat victors over Pierre Trudeau's Liberals, but still short of a clear majority. 16 years of Liberal leadership are at an end. But because of the voting pattern, the Conservative victory also seems to pose a new threat to Canada's already tattered unity. Steve Young has more from Toronto.
When it became clear that Conservative leader Joe Clark had won control of a minority of Parliament, Liberal Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau faced his followers earlier this morning and conceded defeat.
I think it is my duty at this time to recommend to my colleagues that we hand the government over. As for me, I think I will be a pretty good leader of the opposition, surrounded as I am.
Soon after, 39-year-old Joe Clark, who will be Canada's youngest prime minister, addressed a jubilant crowd in Spruce Grove, Alberta.
We have achieved, and we have achieved together, a victory for change in this country, and that is what we are together going to achieve.
The election return shows a Canada split in two more sharply than ever before. Trudeau won an overwhelming victory in French-speaking Quebec, but was wiped out in English Canada. Talking in French, Clark sought to soothe the people of Quebec, whose government is pledged to holding a referendum on whether the province should separate from the rest of the nation.
Le Québec ne se sentira pas isolé.
Quebec will not feel isolated in a Clark government.
Quebec separatist premier René Lévesque, whose hand appears to be strengthened by Clark's victory, is expected to comment on the national election outcome before the Quebec National Assembly later today. Steve Young, CBS News, Toronto.
Margaret Trudeau followed the election returns at a New York apartment, then went discoing at Manhattan Studio 54, where she told reporters she plans to go back to Canada to visit her estranged husband and predicted Pierre Trudeau will be the best opposition leader known to the world. The two executions which have been scheduled this morning at the Florida State Prison are not taking place. A stay for one convict came yesterday afternoon, for the second not until about midnight, as Sam Ford reports from the prison.
Some of the 200 demonstrators at the Florida State Prison sang the hymn Amazing Grace this morning after they learned that 30-year-old John Spinkeling's execution had been stayed. He had been scheduled to die at 7 a.m. Eastern Time. But before the announcement, the demonstrators chanted angry slogans, while inside, prison inmates started fires by throwing burning paper into the hallways. The extent of the damage is not known, but prison officials called in at least one rescue unit. The prison superintendent said approximately one-third of the 1,500 inmates refused meals yesterday to protest the scheduled executions of Spinkeling and 45-year-old Willie Darden. A federal judge in Tampa granted Darden a stay of execution yesterday afternoon. Spinkeling got a reprieve from both the U.S. Supreme Court's Justice Thurgood Marshall and Judge Elbert Tuttle of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. If the courts have not resolved the Spinkeling case by noon Friday, the current death warrant against him expires, and the governor of Florida will have to sign a new one. Sam Ford, CBS News, at the Florida State Prison.
What happens now? A report from CBS News law correspondent Fred Graham in Washington.
Justice Thurgood Marshall's stay of execution for John Spinkeling is expected to be short-lived. The votes are simply not there on the Supreme Court for opponents of capital punishment, and the full court will probably overturn Justice Marshall's stay today or tomorrow. But meanwhile, Court of Appeals Judge Elbert Tuttle in Atlanta was granting Spinkeling a stay on a new legal point, the allegation that the condemned murderer did not have adequate counsel at his trial. That issue will be quickly considered by the Court of Appeals, and so Spinkeling's case could be back before the Supreme Court for the fifth time this time by next week. Spinkeling's lawyers would then be able to try again, the kind of justice shopping that saw them go to two justices last night before they found a third, Justice Marshall, who was willing to grant a stay. It's certain that the opponents of capital punishment will make every effort to keep Spinkeling from the electric chair because he would be the first unwilling prisoner to be executed in this country in 12 years, and that could touch off a chain of executions across the United States. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
In San Francisco, where the Rocks flew the night before in protest to the manslaughter conviction of Dan White, Voices raised in song last night as the gay community turned out again. David Dow reports.
From the beginning, the message was nonviolent. For weeks, San Francisco's gay community had planned the observance of what would have been the 49th birthday of City County Supervisor Harvey Milk, an avowed homosexual killed with Mayor George Moscone last November. And organizers were determined that it not become a rerun of Monday's violent demonstration. It did not. Thousands, estimates range from 5 to 15,000, jammed a street in the heart of the gay community for the birthday party. Police were on alert, but out of sight, leaving crowd control to monitors from the community. Speakers lamented Monday's violence, but Milk's successor, Harry Britt, said they should not apologize for it.
Let no one believe that the step that we have taken is a step from nonviolence to violence.
Right.
We have suffered too much with the hands of violence.
At the end, the same streets that had launched Monday's angry protest produced nothing more violent than a street dance lasting until midnight. David Dow, CBS News, San Francisco.
To the cheers of some and the boos of others, those 12 most wanted state senators have ended their boycott and returned to the Texas State Senate, confident they've won their fight against separating presidential primaries in Texas. In advance of new talks with Egypt, new violence, a bomb blast inside Israel today. Dan Revive reports.
A woman and her baby girl were killed in the explosion at a bus stop in Petah Tikva, a suburb of Tel Aviv. At least 12 other people were wounded. Security officials say they believe this was the work of Palestinian terrorists who are protesting Israel's peace treaty with Egypt and violently rejecting the autonomy offered to Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip. Israel and Egypt begin their talks on setting up autonomy the day after tomorrow. Also on Friday, Israel will hand the largest town in the Sinai, El Arish, back to Egyptian control. There are still some unresolved questions, such as when the new border at El Arish will be open to civilian traffic. There's also the matter of about 100 Israeli settlers in the northern Sinai who are sitting in, refusing to vacate a 500-acre field, which is also to go back to Egypt on Friday. The settlers shouted insults at Defense Minister Ezer Weitzman when he went to the field today to ask them to leave. Weitzman left without even completing a sentence. He then joined the talks in El Arish between Foreign Minister Moshe Dayan and Egypt's Minister of State Boutros Ghali. They're trying to make the first transfer of occupied territory as part of peace as smooth as possible. Dan Revive for CBS News, Tel Aviv.
In San Salvador, reporters have counted the bodies of 14 men, women, and children killed when police opened fire on their procession last night. They were attempting to take food to leftists holding the Venezuelan embassy in El Salvador's capital. Police say they were fired upon first, but leftists deny it. United Airlines is now planning ahead again, looking to win back its passengers, and has asked for approval of $108 one-way fares for some of its coast-to-coast flights. But first must come the machinist union vote today and tomorrow on ending the 52-day-old strike, as Robert Jordan reports from Chicago.
This is the third contract vote for the rank-and-file members of the machinist union. Two previous tentative agreements were rejected. The present settlement calls for a 30% increase in pay over a three-year period and new fringe benefits. This has been the longest strike in the history of United, reportedly costing the airline over $1 million a day. Major tourist areas serviced by United have been hardest hit. Hawaii reportedly lost $35 million in revenue during the month of April. And passengers in many small towns found travel difficult, sometimes impossible, without frequent and convenient air transportation. If during the next 2 days of balloting, the union ratifies the contract, then United could begin limited service by the first of next week, with full service expected a week to 10 days later. Robert Jordan, CBS News, Chicago.
House Democratic leaders headed off a revolt within President Carter's own party today. They used the clock to stall, at least until tomorrow, a House Democratic caucus vote opposing President Carter's decision to lift oil price controls. Five House Democrats today are announcing a nationwide campaign to draft Senator Edward Kennedy as the 1980 nominee. Kennedy says no thanks, but the Democrats say they'll press on.